Hello and welcome to the Cannon Fodder Podcast. I'm Daniel Barnes, a film critic, apostle, disciple, whore. I've been called many things. And of course, today on the show, we're going to review the gospel according to St. Matthew, quote unquote, St. Matthew. But let's talk for a second about the gospel according to Dan motherfucking Barnes. We never talk about that, do we? And ladies and gentlemen, I'm no saint. I didn't say Saint Dan motherfucking Barnes or Dan Saint Mother Sainting Saint, whatever. But if you know anything about Dan motherfucking Barnes, you know that I am a loose cannon with a tenuous grip on reality and an unquenchable penchant for revenge. So what could go wrong? Trust me. But I say that the truth, the one truth, the savior, the man that I call the man, the one that I call the comedy messiah, the one true faith, Saint Corky. And if you don't agree with me on this point, I will do as your favorite heroes of the Bible did, and I will smite you and wipe out your entire bloodline. So watch it. Is that way we don't have more PayPal subscribers? Is it the smiting? Is it the smiting or is it the bloodline? Is it the blood? It's the bloodline thing, right? Because when I hear my, I write it in the script. It looks good. I hear myself say it. It doesn't sound as good.
Was that my intro?
Corky McDonald. No, that was your intro. You're the savior. Please save the show because it's ruined.
Well, verily, I say unto thee, Daniel, and everybody listening, I have long been the decadent atheist on this podcast who's just said the most disrespectful things. But I think you're
one of the decadent atheists.
Yeah, that's true. But you just set the all speed land record for blasphemy in a 30-second audio clip for our podcast. Yeah. And this is the podcast where we sacrifice two random number generating gods, gods we created. So we blaspheme every episode, literally.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, false idols. We have many.
I think that was a fantastic opening.
Thank you. Gosh, I felt pretty good about it.
Yeah.
I really did, considering I didn't have anything to do. And the show's starting over an hour late. So
we had some audio issues, which
audio issues, video issues, our souls are damned to hell for eternity. We got a lot of freaking problems. Okay. We don't bore you with every single thing. I would have messed with my levels.
But I'm sitting backwards in a chair. I've slung my jacket over my shoulder and I want to talk to you about someone else who had trouble getting their messages out. Come unto us. Oh, you know what? I never know the answer to that. Every time, I lead off with, you know who else? Blah, 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 blah. Who? You know what? I don't know.
Ah, shit. What was his name?
I can't prove it.
Ah, not Edison. Who was that guy? Fuck. Yeah. But you know who the real
saviors
are? Yeah, the saviors of our asses,
mm-hmm.
really. And asses are in the Bible, too. So this is all good. You know who else is in the Bible? John is in the Bible. Daniel is in the Bible.
That's true. Those are two names in the Bible.
A lot. We are pretty biblical on the show, all right?
But we have nothing.
Name is Matthew.
Nothing in the savior realm on our PayPal supporters. They are the saviors. They are the true light and the way for the show. And we want to take a moment to thank each and every one of you with beautiful butterfly kisses.
Yeah.
We couldn't do the show without you, quite literally. We almost couldn't do the show today, even with you. But we can definitely cannot do it without you.
Barely at all with you. But without you, like, forget it. I mean, the night in the agony in the garden. I mean, Jesus Christ. It's like, oh, literally Jesus Christ.
There you go.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Could not do this show without you, would not do this show without you, certainly should not do this show without you. And if you'd like to donate to the show, head over to DearDaniel.com and support us on the old PayPal. Find the menu at the top of the page, click support the show. Any contribution that you give helps keep this show going. Our subscribers, as far as I'm concerned, you were conceived without sex. That's how great I think you are. I don't think your parents had sex.
No. Nope.
Ever.
You were immaculate.
Immaculate. Perfect. Nailed it. Literally nailed it. But not really because of the immaculate good thing.
Today we'll be discussing Pier Paolo Pasolini's The Gospel According to Saint Matthew. The IMDb synopsis of this film: the life of Jesus Christ according to the Gospel of Matthew. Film shows Christ as a Marxist avant a la... I don't know that word.
Yeah, I don't know that one either.
Okay.
Avant la lettre? What the fuck? Who, why?
Avant a let... Film shows Christ as a Marxist avant la lettre, and therefore uses half of the text of Matthew.
Yes, this week's film, The Gospel According to St. Matthew, written and directed by Italian filmmaker Pier Paolo Pasolini, based on the Gospel of Matthew, starring Enrique Arazzocchi as Jesus Christ. It was made in the neorealist style using non-professional actors, shooting in real locations without sound. But while films like Paisan and Bicycle Thieves that we've reviewed on the show, even Battle of Algiers, I think, were riding kind of a populist groundswell at the time, the openly gay, Catholic, atheist, Marxist Pasolini, for reasons I just mentioned, spent his entire life going against the grain. There's not even nearly enough time to adequately cover his life, work, and death in just this brief intro. He was a prolific director, writer, playwright, and poet. Started working at Cinecittà in 1951, co-wrote Fellini's Knights of Cabiria in 1957, made his first film, Acetone, in 1961, his last film, 1975's Sallow, or The 120 Days of Sodom, has been called the most controversial film of all time. He was savagely murdered November 2nd, 1975, at a beach in Ostia. 17-year-old named Pino Pelosi was caught and confessed to the crime, but later retracted his confession, and the case is still officially unsolved. For its part, The Gospel According to St. Matthew, made in 1964, attracted controversy even during pre-production. Pasolini made a short film called La Ricotta, which also featured Jesus, and he was convicted of attacking the state religion, receiving a suspended prison sentence. The film itself is not a word-for-word recitation of the original text of The Gospel of St. Matthew, but all the film's dialogue comes directly from the Gospel. However, Pasolini films it through this lens of 2,000 years of artistic interpretations. My film is the life of Christ after 2,000 years of stories on the life of Christ. He's demythologizing, but he's also remythologizing, sort of based on these, like I said, 2,000 years of interpretations. Film premiered September 4, 1964 at the Venice Film Festival, where it won the Grand Jury Prize. It received mostly positive reviews at the time, with the most pointed criticism coming from left-wing critics and intellectuals like Jean-Paul Sartre. It's on the Vatican's list of 45 great films, and in 2015, the Vatican City newspaper La Osservatore Romano called it the best film on Christ ever made. It was nominated for 3 Oscars: art direction, costume design, and adapted score, and it tied at number 157 on the 2022 Sight and Sound Critics Bowl, the only Pasolini film to make the top 250. Corky.
Yeah. My child.
The Doubter. The Doubter.
Mm-hmm.
Odette, not a chance. Right? Like many a religious film has laid in your wake. The real miracle here. Loaves and the fishes, forget about it. The real miracle would be if you thought this was a sound selection. So what do we got? So your Sermon on the Mount, Corky, lay it down on us. Is a miracle going to happen today?
In my defense, I found Passion of Joan of Arc to be amazing, which
is a very
religious movie. And I love Dreyer's other films, even with the religious overtones. I just didn't care for it yet. This is a very, very good movie. It's not canon worthy for me. I'm just going to get right out front with it. but it is a very good movie. I like a lot of what was being done in this. It just didn't get me over the hump. And I like that it's a movie kind of about the story and about 2,000 years of living with the story. Because coming into it, you couldn't say like, well, this movie doesn't. If I came into this not knowing the story, you would just be like, what the fuck is happening? Because right, it presumes you know the source material, right?
Absolutely.
So you're just following that. And it's a visual representation. But I did like the demythologizing, I think, of a lot of it, that it's not a grand spectacle that was probably more par for the course of big Hollywood epics of biblical stories at that time.
Yeah, and this is 64. We're kind of coming at like the tail end of that Hollywood biblical epic phase that kind of started in the 50s with like The Robe and Ten Commandments and then continued through Ben-Hur and on and on and on.
Yeah.
64, we were kind of like saturated with that. It was a little old hat. And so, yeah, Pasolini comes in with a different take on it, even though, as I said, it's very faithful. Very faithful, actually. Yeah. There's nothing in the dialogue that is not in the Gospel of St. Matthew. There's things in Gospel of St. Matthew that aren't in the film Gospel According to St. Matthew. And things, I guess, are rearranged in different orders and things like that. And there's sort of a tonal kind of change, but it's in the style, it's in that the mood of it, it's in, like I say, the tone of it is where Pasolini takes sacred text and really makes it his own with this like really interesting spin on neorealism, right? With the use of handheld camera. He's shooting on location, but he's shooting on location at like the most stunning historical location that you have ever seen, the Sassi di Matera, which are these homes literally cut into mountains. It's neighborhoods really that are cut into a mountain, like cave dwellings in a mountain. I read something today. It said Matera is the only place in the world where people can boast to still be living in the same houses of their ancestors of 9,000 years ago.
Jesus.
9,000 years ago.
It looks like something.
And that's what it looks like.
It looks like an Anasazi thing out of the Sonoran Desert, you know? Like something literally carved into cliff face. And it was
something truly ancient.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Because it doesn't just look like that. It is that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You can't fake that. He worked at Cinecittà. They do great work there at Cinecittà. You can't do that at Cinecittà, okay? You know, you can do like a quarter of a, you know, Colosseum and film it like that, but yeah, you cannot recreate this, and it's just unbelievable. Some of these locations made me think a little bit of Where's the Friend's House?
Yeah.
And some of those neighborhoods that were, again, just cut out of rock, just cut out homes, just cut out of rock, and these kind of twisting like lanes and these steep staircases and things like that, and these unbelievable views that you have. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. But yeah, he shoots it in this like often in like a kind of documentary like way to some of the scenes, like the trials of Jesus even has like handheld camera.
Yeah.
People in the way, like you're trying, like you're there.
It takes a second to track the person it's trying to find.
Like, wait, where are we? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty ahead of its time, I think, in that way. But like I said, it's neorealism, but it's kind of doing something a little bit different.
Yeah, it's taking really this grand known, sacred, in especially in that region, story tradition, and putting it into something that was new style of filmmaking that they were doing again in that same region. I would say, like, if it was nowadays, it would be like if they did a found footage version of the Gospels. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the kind of, like, if it was shot with like a digital camera.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. No, that's the kind of the feel that it has. Yeah, it has this like modern, you know, not modern for now, but modern for 1964 kind of style, which is like really bracing. But again, there's also this like simplicity to it that feels very classic. It's this strange blend of styles, but I think the narrative is the same way. The music is the same way. It has this like weird and really fascinating mix of things, right? Like the score, which has, first of all, this Oscar-nominated score, as I said, by Louis Bacalov, but then the music ranges from Mozart and Bach and Prokofiev to Odetta, you know, A Motherless Child, Blind Willie Johnson, Congolese music, Jewish music, Songs of Glory, Songs of Suffering, from this wide variety of eras and a wide variety of cultures. It's, you know, as I said, like, it's about Jesus on a very simple, very direct sort of a level, but it's also about like all of the interpretations of it over the years and all of how it's been reflected in our culture and in all cultures around the world.
The music the music was absolutely my favorite part of this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way the score would come in at different times in different occasions, but it would be a kind of a, not a leitmotif, but just it would play the same songs a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you said, it was Blind Willie. First time I heard it, I was like, is that meant to sound like blues music? Like a soulful, moaning, wailing style of blues? And yeah, it is. Wow, okay. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. This is now it's not that anymore. It is something different, but it's just as like impactful in the mm-hmm. scene. The music was absolutely my favorite part.
No, I agree. But I think, like, again, the styles, the mix of like this like cinema verite style with like a more classical style that's like influenced by like religious paintings mm-hmm. and sculptures and things like that, kind of anachronistic costumes and things that are obviously reflecting different cultures and things. And then I think like the central part of the story itself, like I say, it's a pretty straightforward in a lot of ways telling of the life of Christ. It starts at the nativity, it ends at crucifixion and resurrection, and everything you expect to see pretty much is there. Loaves and fishes is there, the miracles are there, the healings are there, and the disciples and the Last Supper and the three kings and like all, everything you expect is King Herod killing the babies. It's all there. You know what I mean? It's all there, but it's just like, it has this like really kind of vital sort of feel to it. I think it actually gets better and more exciting as it goes. Maybe just because the story of Jesus gets better. But like this whole midsection of the film, like this movie, I think was obviously a big influence on Martin Scorsese
mm-hmm.
for Last Temptation of Christ.
He like, said as much.
Unconventional and yet strangely reverent. I also noticed in the credits as like an assistant art director is Dante Ferretti, who did not work on Last Temptation of Christ, but has been a frequent collaborator of Scorsese. He was the art director on Age of Innocence and a lot of other Scorsese films. But whereas I think like Scorsese's unconventional yet strangely reverent take got a lot of heat for having like a Jesus of the flesh and a Jesus who is sort of like wishy-washy in a sense of like, I don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want to be the savior. I don't know if I'm ready for that. Pasolini's Jesus is laser focused.
Uh-huh.
This dude is like, there's no ambivalence. There is no doubt. There's no fear. They try to tempt him. It takes like 5 seconds for him to be like, yeah, no, not tempted. Not tempted. This is a revolutionary Jesus. We talked about Marxist, right? This is a revolutionary Jesus, and this Jesus is confident, he is certain of his righteousness, and he is ready to die for his cause, just like any good revolutionary of the 1960s. You know what I mean? He's a Jesus for that time, even though he's Jesus.
Yeah.
Because as we said, nothing in the dialogue is not actually in the gospel. So and I think that's sort of like Pasolini's kind of overall message, I think, if you will, of kind of making it relevant and sort of seeing Christ through the lens of a non-believer but pretending to be a believer, or thinking how would a believer see this, you know, putting him in the shoes of a believer. So I think it's fascinating. At the same time, like you, I think it was just a little bit short.
Yeah.
The canonization, which is ironic.
I didn't even think about
that. All these saints were canonized, right? Like everybody in this movie practically was canonized. but yeah, I think also just a little short. And it's I hate rejecting, I hate doing this because we set the bar high for canonization, as you should.
Yeah.
Right. I hate rejecting films that I really, 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 really like and would say, this is a wonderful film. Everyone should see it. If you're religious, you should see it. If you're not religious, you should see it. Excellent, excellent movie. But our bar for me is like films in the 90th or above percentile of every film I've ever seen. And what is like the difference to get there is that it needs to connect with me on some sort of a personal level.
I can't say what it should. I'm sorry to cut you off if you were getting something.
No. I think you're about to make the exact point that I'm at.
I can't
like,
say
what is the. There's no thing to say like this should have been that. Yeah, or that should have been this or anything. Right. It's just like this is as good as it could get.
Yeah.
And I think that's great.
That's a great movie.
But in a personal sense, like I'm not trying to canonize for anyone else, but
yes,
myself. Exactly. Right. I'm just going off of my own thing and. To me, it's just, it's a little slight,
just
but as slight as it gets, yeah. Just a slight to that. And like, again, the difference is not connecting with it on that kind of like gut level. I'm looking for something that is saying, this is a Dan Barnes movie.
Yeah.
This is one that I'm putting, you know, like we're taking these on the spaceship. With us,
okay? Right?
Like when we're all heading to whatever planet Vigil said.
Once our real saviors come and get us off this planet to fly us to XJ9000. You know what I really, really dug in this movie? And I saw, I think, influences for the Coens is faces. He had an eye for some great faces. There's a lot of close-ups.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And the Coen brothers do a lot of that, or at least in their earlier stuff. They really held on some interesting faces. And I think Pasolini had an eye for that in this. Not just reaction shots, but we're just setting things up. There's a lot of reaction shots because, of course, you know, it's about a movie about a man who gets a following. But anything that's happening, he finds the face, the best face, right?
No, it's so true. Yeah, like Judas has like the perfect face, right? Like you're such a perfect Judas. It's so good.
He might have been the best in this movie, man.
He's really good. Yeah.
I like that. I like the casting. There's some unsettling images in here. Like he holds on some things that like we're not accustomed to seeing in modern filmmaking. Physical limitations and disabilities captured frankly. It makes uncomfortableness, and the uncomfortableness is played for its uncomfortableness, and for Jesus to perform miracles, to heal, to cure a leper, to get a man who can't walk to walk again. We see that kind of thing, right? You wouldn't do that nowadays, and I think Pasolini made great use of finding the people who lived amongst that area and casting them and putting them in a film.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, again, we talked about like Pasolini as being like, kind of like the ultimate like social outcast of like everyone, because he like he hated leftists like more than he hated, you know, the right wingers who most likely eventually murdered him. You know, like he was always courting controversy. He was always somebody who was kind of like on the outside, and I think that's like he's always I think connected with like outsiders, whores, you know, criminals, you know, people just really living on the margins of society. Like that's where he has his sympathy. And that's where like this movie, like this Jesus, that's who he cares about. Like
yes,
this is like, yes, this is a Jesus that like would make most modern Christians sick.
Yes,
would make them discuss it. And it's the Jesus, you know, from the Bible.
That's so funny. Like the two works that we just talked about Pasolini working from are the Bible and the Marquis de Sade. Like, right. And he makes a movie about a Jesus who's like would defend Marquis de Sade against others. Like, no, you love him just as much as you love everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, he's anti-business.
Yeah,
this Jesus. I tell you what, you know, yeah, he's. Yeah, but the movie, like I said, I think in the midsection, like it really, like it's just him, like the John Wick of Christianity. He's just getting a fucking business.
Yeah.
Just slicing and dicing. Miracle, psh, miracle, psh, parable, psh, parable, sermon, psh, sermon, psh, I'm on a mount, psh, bitch. Like, he's only got so much time. Like, he knows his fate.
It's ecclesiastical, like, headshot after headshot.
Getting down to fucking business. This is the anti-establishment, anti-wealth, socially conscious Jesus that no Christians want,
yeah,
in real life, you know. But yeah, it's a heck of a film. Yet at the same time, like I said, it is just short. It's in the 88th percentile, but probably not in the 90th percentile. But it is a film that, you know, like we said, there's nothing to guide you through this film as far as like a narrator, or, you know, John Huston isn't here, or James Earl Jones or somebody. There's no captions to be like, Galilee 5 years later,
yeah,
whatever, you know, like that. But if you have even a passing familiarity with the story of Jesus, like, this should be very familiar to you and pretty easy to follow. I found it pretty easy to follow just because I'm like, oh yeah, right? Like, there's the Nativity, there's the Immaculate Conception, there's the three wise men, and now we've moved on to this, and now we're on that.
Yeah.
It's the story of Jesus, but again, it's in the differences in style and tone and mood is where Pasolini really kind of makes this his own film. Corky.
Yeah.
Anything you wanted to talk about before we wrap this up and give our
reading? I like that you pointed out how the middle of the film, it's just like banger after banger, because that was, I think, my favorite part. Starting that King Herod, the attack on the village after Joseph and Mary get out of there,
yeah,
and they slaughter all the firstborn sons and everything. That is brutal. Like, I can know that, like, okay, those are dummy babies. They're just bundles of rags. That's not, but man, they do not go easy on that. They wallop and destroy these children. Even Mel Gibson, the reactionary Catholic bigot, doesn't go that far in his movies. Of
too much.
Yes. But my favorite was the kind of like, we're getting the band back together when he's recruiting his disciples.
Yeah.
And he starts preaching at him because we're really close on his face. And the camera follows him as if you're a disciple following as he preaches to you. It's easy to do because it's re-recorded, but he's preaching to you as he's walking away from you and not looking at you, but then we'll turn around and this lead actor's got a great stare down, stares you right down the barrel of the camera, preaching at you. And then you get reaction shot. Then he's dropping another verse and he's getting reaction shot. So that middle section, and especially that part where he's leading around and you see the gospel, what are they called? The disciples really falling under his spell.
Yeah, that's a fantastic sequence. Yeah, Jesus is like king of the rhetorical trap, right? Like, he's just like, oh, what about this? And it's like, well, he's got a slam dunk,
yeah,
like, swat down for every attempt to like put him in a corner, baby. Yeah, this is a no fucking around Jesus
and
in this movie.
I love that it is all the actual text, or at least that interpretation of the text, because you get this shit. They keep trying to fire questions at him, and that's their focus is so random. It like
I know,
you know, like if a guy lies to me, how many times do I let him lie to me? Seven times, like seven times, 70 times, seven times. No, you think it's one way, but Jesus is going to tell you it's another way.
Right. Yes.
Okay, my brother died. I, of course, get his wife. How many times do I get to have his wife? Right.
Valid question. No, that's that's good stuff. All right, well, let's wrap this up. If you don't have anything left, let's wrap it up and give our ratings. Just to remind everybody, we rate on the sight or sound scale. If we both think that this was a sound selection, kaboom, right into the cannon fodder cannon it goes. If one or both of us think that it was a wee bit slight, just a wee bit slight of the cannon, and remember it's a high bar, then we will exclude it from the canon, unfortunately. Sorry, you're doomed to wander the earth forever between worlds. But we will put up for canonization a slighted film not in the Sight and Sound top 250 to put in its place. So, Corky, for you, The Gospel According to St. Matthew, slight or sound?
I'm going to, before the crow crawl before the cock crows three times, I will thrice deny this movie. I won't betray it because I never made a promise, but I
thrice will. Jesus,
yeah, slight.
I was gonna deny
slight.
It twice, yeah, very slight, like super slight.
Yes,
like,
it's so close.
This is on the short list of like maybe my shoes were just too tight. You know, like the wind, just if a butterfly's wings flapped east,
yeah,
instead of west, probably this gets a sound. But for me, yeah, it's also just a little bit slight. I don't know. I thought the first maybe 10 or 15 minutes, I was like, oh man, this is not going to be good. Mm. I don't think this is going to be good. And after a while, I really got so into it. And so maybe it's on a second viewing, it'll come back, but to me it was just a little slight. So that is no canonization for The Gospel According to St. Matthew. Sorry, Mr. Pasolini. But Corky, do you have a slighted movie not in the Sight and Sound top 250 to put in its place?
I do. It is another movie about an order from our Heavenly Father and the persecution and denial of the servants trying to carry out the orders of God and the travails that is put upon them. It is the 1980 John Landis film, The Blues Brothers.
They're on a mission from God.
The very heavy religious themes in that movie.
Oh boy.
They are trying to save a Catholic orphanage where that they grew up. Sure. But of course, the movie makes light of these and really is a revolutionary movie in the Pasolini milieu, in that it takes down institutions. Like, they're doing this thing because the institution served them, but the institution doesn't serve them in this grandiose way. Like, it raises, the orphanage raised them, but it raised them, they're hoodlums. They are inveterate criminals. The police are corrupt and ineffectual. They destroy. You could not make the Blues Brothers stay. I know that gets touted around a lot, but you could not make police look this bad on film today. Right. Like this, just incompetent. But the persecution comes from all angles, from people who have it coming, like the Nazis and the rednecks. And actually, Bob's from Bob's Bunkhouse doesn't have it coming. He's just a guy who thought he was going to, you know, they drink all his beer, man. Anyway, I'm going in deep into the thing, but it's a well-filmed movie, I think. I think it gets overlooked because he's just a shit, but Landis was in his bag in the late 70s, early 80s. Like, he put some shit together, and I think The Blues Brothers is a great culmination. There's a reason it's like a cult classic, or not even a cult classic, that it's just a classic, that it is a staple of Sunday movie afternoons on every channel you can see it on a cable. Yeah, I think that's a movie that needs to be rewarded in the pantheon of the canon because it's very fucking good. And the cast, holy shit, the cast. And it's good music. It's a musical. Yeah. Blues Brothers.
Well, shit. As much as I hate, I mean, it seems a little philistinic to say this Pasolini film, this classic Italian film about Jesus. No. Blues Brothers, yes. It's almost unfair what you're doing to me here, Corky, because, you know, I'm not going to turn down the Blues Brothers. This is a movie I've seen like a thousand times. Every time it was on TV, I watched it, and it's still so fucking
good. It's so fucking good.
It's crazy fun. The energy of this movie that carries it through like almost 2.5 hours is just like crazy, crazy energy to this movie. Action, comedy, music.
Miracles.
No, it's a blast. No, it truly is a blast. Yes, and miracles. Absolutely.
On my most recent, I just rewatched it, and this really just popped in my head. I was like, well, this really ties into this. I love how it's cartoony and it doesn't take any care to explain away the cartooniness. Carrie Fisher fires a rocket. Our first intro into her. We don't know who she is or why she's doing this. She fires a rocket launcher at them. The building falls down on them. They just get up, dust off, and go in another day in their neighborhood, right? Cab Calloway is in a black suit and tie like the Blues Brothers. You see who they get their style from. And then the camera comes up and all the band is dressed like it's, you know, the Cotton Club in the 20s. Fucking. And then it goes right back. And, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's Simpsons pre-Simpsons. Right? Like it's that kind of comedy sort of anarchy of like anything can be anything and we don't need to explain it. We don't need to justify it or anything like that. It's just, it's what it is.
It serves the gag. It's great.
Absolutely. So Blues Brothers, kaboom.
Hey!
You go. Well deserved. So my pick is almost like 2 on the nose, but I got to go with it. It's my guy, Martin Scorsese, Last Temptation of Christ, the 1988 film. Screenplay by Paul Schrader, based on the Nikos Kazantzakis novel.
Fucking up your alley.
Starring Willem Dafoe as Jesus. As I said before, Scorsese's Jesus is a Jesus of the flesh. Pasolini's Jesus is tempted for like a half second. But as the title states, Scorsese's film is all about temptation. And Scorsese's Jesus is human enough, that is to say weak enough, mortal enough, to actually be tempted by Satan, to be tempted by another path, especially in those final moments. The film attracted a lot of stupid controversy when it was released, so maybe that may have stopped you from ever watching it, thinking, oh, this is bad or something, but it's a stunning film. Freaking amazing film, visually speaking. Maybe this is just my agnosticism talking, but I connected more with the life, death, and message of Jesus through this film than probably through anything else in any other medium. The irony of the controversy, I think, is that the film actually takes this shit seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Really takes it seriously. That, if anything, is what people were objecting to, I think. Jesus is real. He's human. He's not this perfectly lit magical creature. And it's actually showing like what is a person who is human. How does he behave and think and act and all those things in this kind of situation where he knows what's in it for him? Pasolini's Jesus, you wouldn't say that. He's not human. He literally walks on water.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He does not doubt himself one bit.
He's not a regular guy, and he has no doubt about what he's doing. Scorsese is just on another level here. Cinematographer Michael Ballhaus just goes freaking off. He was Fassbender's DP, don't you know? Worked with Scorsese a lot and shot Wild Wild West. What a career. Thelma Schoonmaker clipping it. Peter Gabriel score, that amazing freaking cast that I mentioned, Harvey Keitel, Barbara Hershey. Bowie is in this fucking movie. For fuck's sake. Location shooting in Morocco. It's an amazing film. Have you seen Last Temptation of Christ?
No, it's one of the Scorsese's I have not seen. I've always been interested. And I just never did it.
Well worth it. And if it was the Christianity angle?
No.
The controversy angle that kept you out of it, or the length or anything like that? I urge you to give this film a chance. So let's say no canon for Last Temptation of Christ, but maybe it's on the wait list, possibly.
Okay, so sadly we did not canonize Gospel According to St. Matthew, but what did you think about the film? Did you watch it with us? Had you seen it before? We'd love to hear your take on it. Leave us a comment on your favorite podcast app or contact us on Facebook and Instagram at DareDanerPod. Tell us your thoughts. We would love for you to spend your social media dollar that way. Let us know. Engage with us on any of our platforms.
All right, Corky, it is now that time of the show where we are going to randomly select the film.
Hell yeah.
That we will review in 2 weeks on our next episode. You ready to do this?
Let's go.
Random number generated. That ties into the list. The number on the list ties into a movie, and the movie has the hilarious title of Tookie Bookie. Tookie Bookie. I don't think it's a comedy. Tookie Bookie, 1973 film.
I'm already laughing.
Jabril Jop Mambati. And I'll give you the letterbox synopsis of Tookie Bookie. Maury, a cowherd, and Anta, a university student, try to make money in order to go to Paris and leave their boring past behind. Tookie Bookie, Quirky, you can watch it on Criterion Channel. You can watch it on HBO Max, Mubi. You can watch it on VOD. You can rent it. You can buy it. A lot of different ways to watch this film. I have almost no familiarity or knowledge or understanding of Tookie Bookie at all. I have never seen it. I've kind of barely heard of it. Pretty excited about that. It's two in a row that I've never seen and don't really know anything about.
Yeah, I only know Tookie Tookie from George of the Jungle. Tookie Tookie.
Sure. That's... And Coochie Coochie from Charo.
Those are the two things I know.
Here's something I learned at TIL. Today I learned Charo alive. Did you know this?
I did not know this. I was not aware of the Charo.
Charo's alive. I know that, like, back in the day, Charo had her age legally changed. Like, she had her birth date legally changed from, like, 1941 to 1951.
I love that for her.
Or something like that. That was, like, an actual court case.
Good for her.
That went in front of a judge to, like, establish that, like, her birth date was wrong and that she married Xavier Cugat when she was, like, 14 years old.
Holy shit.
Like, was just like, this is all wrong. None of this makes any sense. But yes, legally, I think maybe she's legally like extended her life.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how that like it works. I think she might have.
Maybe that's the way you do it.
Possibly. Right? You just, it's all lawyers. It's all lawyers. Always... God damn it. Right?
And that explains defending your life. The American Thank legal you. System is so good, it carries on to
this
the afterlife.
All finally ties in. Defending Your Life is another good movie.
I know. About, I thought about that one to canonize, too.
That's all bad. Not bad. Well, that's all we have for you on this week's episode. Like I said, join us in 2 weeks. We'll be reviewing Tookie Bookie. And if you want to play it long at home, like I said, Criterion Channel, HBO Max, your usual VOD services, Mubi, etc., etc.
Until then, follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook and Instagram. Like and rate us on your favorite podcast app. If you'd like to donate to the show, visit daredaniel.com. Find Support the Show in the menu or look for the Donate button. If you're a fan of new movies, listen to my man Daniel over here review the top films of the day on Single Take with Daniel Barnes. For Cannon Fodder, I'm Corky McDonald.
And I'm the aforementioned Daniel Barnes. Until next time, save us a seat in the back row. Bye-bye.